from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Today, it is nearly impossible to imagine San Francisco's Telegraph Hill without its landmark Coy Tower. But when the San Francisco Arts Commission approved the tower project in the early 1930s, public opinion was sharply divided. For 80 years, the city's Arts Commission has been at the center of a lively and often stormy debate over taxpayer-funded art. This commission's pivotal role in shaping public art and design is the subject of a new book, San Francisco Arts for the City. We'll talk to the author, Susan Wells, and to the current director of the commission, and a pair of artists presently involved in public art. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of our forum program. The San Francisco Arts Commission is celebrating 80 years of public art that have had a great deal to do with defining the city and county of San Francisco. And in this forum hour, we want to look back and ahead at the illustrious and sometimes controversial and contentious history of the Arts Commission and the wide range of works that have shaped its ongoing history. Joining us here in studio for the hour is Susan Wells, who is the author of San Francisco, Arts for the City, Civic Art and Urban Change, 1932 to 2012. Her other books include Titanic, Legacy of the World's Greatest Ocean Liner, and California Academy of Sciences, Architecture in Harmony with Nature. She also did a biography of Amelia Earhart, which we featured here on Forum. And welcome back, Susan Wells.
Thank you, Michael.
Also want to welcome Tom DeCaney, who is Director of Cultural Affairs with the City and County of San Francisco, also a board member of the California Alliance for Arts Education. Welcome, Tom DeCaney.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Susan, first of all, congratulations on this book. Got kind of the whole history of civic art and the Art Commission both wrapped into one here, music and sculpture and paintings and dance and literature and community art programs. I mean, there's a lot that you have to tackle here.
It's a big history, and it starts in 1932, and San Francisco is a contentious, diverse city, and the civic art reflects all of those elements.
Well, there's some great stories behind some of this. And early on, we're talking about Coy Tower, which is one of the most arresting stories for me of all, because talk about contention. I mean, they had murals with the hammer and sickle and Karl Marx's books and United Workers of the World Unite, all that kind of stuff. And boy, did it stir up a hornet's nest, many hornet's nests.
It sure did, and it happened right after the Arts Commission was created in 1932. So Coit Tower was dedicated in 1933 after a lot of controversy. Critics didn't want it built. They called it a silo and a smelter chimney. But one of the arts commissioners, whose name was Herbert Fleischacker, was determined to build it because it would mean that the city would have to buy cement from his cement company to do so. So he pushed it through. Well,
the fix was in. All those kinds of things were going through my head. But I've sworn I would be less corny, so I'll let that rest. But go back to the history, if you would. I mean, the narrative of the history and what happened.
Yeah. Well, so Fleischacker pushed the project through. It was dedicated in 1933, and almost immediately it became part of the Treasury Department's new Public Works of Art project, and that was to help desperate artists who were barely scraping by during the Depression. So they hired 24 artists who created these incredible murals and frescoes and paintings on the interior walls of Coit Tower. Now, interestingly, what happened soon after that is they're up at Coit Tower with this incredible view of the San Francisco waterfront, and the Pacific Maritime Strike gets started by May 1934, just a few months after they started their project.
Strikers are heaving bricks, and there's violence of all kinds.
There's pickets, there's all kinds of activity.
And death as a result.
Well, that happened just a little bit later in July. But in May, the strikers are watching this, rather the painters are watching the strike activity. And they start incorporating symbols like the hammer and sickle and an image of Das Kapital in the murals. And the Arts Commission and the federal authorities get quite upset about it. And then the Examiner publishes a picture, a composite image of these scandalous pictures in July 1934 on July 5th. And that very same day was Bloody Thursday in San Francisco.
Bloody Thursday, yeah.
And that's exactly when the strikers clashed with San Francisco police. And there were deaths and lots of injuries. And it was a horrible day in San Francisco history. So they locked up Coit Tower. and the Arts Commission decided that the picture of the hammer and sickle would have to go for artistic reasons.
But the murals were restored, what, 1990?
The murals were restored, yes, in the 1990s. And it opened to the public in October 1934. So everything ended up okay, but it was quite a rocky ride, and it was quite a rocky ride for the brand new Arts Commission.
And as we trace sort of the trajectory of public art, I mean, you have it divided kind of in chronological sections and chapters. Suddenly, post-World War II, the avant-garde is sweeping in. And even before that, you had, surprisingly, back in 1940, for example, Washington High School, you have this amazing work done by an African-American artist. And so there's a convergence of not only experimental and innovative kind of art, but a lot of ethnic artists are suddenly burgeoning, yeah?
That's right. The city's African-American population increased 700% during World War II. And you also had, right after the war, an influx into the city of these artistic pacifists and nonconformists, some of whom had been interned up in Oregon during the war, because of their pacifism. So they gravitated to San Francisco, and they sparked the San Francisco Renaissance in abstract expressionist painting, bebop and blues, and improvisational jazz. And it really kicked off this whole avant-garde art scene in San Francisco right after World War II. And that, of course, morphed into the Beat Movement.
And, in fact, Vernon Alley was the commissioner back then in the 1950s. And the commissioner now is Tom Caney, who is here with us in studio. And, Tom, let's talk first. We've talked more about public art and the development of it and some of the public art that has come to our attention through the years. But I wanted to just find out a little bit about what the Arts Commission does. Now, you're responsible for the whole city public art collection, which is valued at tens of millions of dollars. The Art Commission essentially promotes city arts, and that's what it's always been about. Public art.
The San Francisco Arts Commission is really the city agency that champions the arts throughout San Francisco. And I think that one of my inspirations from Coit Tower to tie it together in one of the newspaper headlines in one of the murals is the Arts Commission awakens from a deep sleep. And I think that the stories we see in this book are a great thread about the fact that arts and politics are very rarely separated.
So this is the whole history of San Francisco, really, I mean, that Susan's done. But you also had all these neighborhood cultural centers and free-spirited festivals and groups that were forming around cultural type of things and hundreds of people and art groups. I mean, the sweep just became really remarkably big.
Yeah.
The big canvas.
The Arts Commission has a broad charge. So in addition to caring for our civic art collection and our cultural assets, we care for four city-owned cultural centers through different neighborhoods in the city. We also oversee the street artist licensing program, which is geared at actually helping entrepreneurial artists set up shop at Justin Herman Plaza and along the port. That had also a very interesting history starting in the 1970s and has really flourished and I think was really the kind of precursor to the makers movement and things like Etsy. So the Arts Commission definitely has a very broad role in the city, and not just in terms of helping artists, but also developing the infrastructure and overseeing the aesthetics of the city. How does it all fit together, and how does design kind of play a role in defining San Francisco as a unique city? And I think in the world, it definitely represents, I think, what the arts can be. You know, when you get off of SFO and Terminal 2, I think it's a great example of how public art can define a place. And the Arts Commission worked with SFO to put in that public art and design that space.
Well, there's been, as we've said, a lot of mixture of art and politics, some of it healthy, some of it not so healthy. I want to ask you now, in fact, directly, just if you could tell us, because the commission came under fire back in 2011 in an audit before your stewardship, and it was, according to New York Times, a mess. I mean, there were there's lack of oversight, there were irregularities in grant programs, improper use of funds. Is the financial house in order now? I have to ask you directly.
It is. It is. You know, I was honored to come in January of 2012, and it certainly had been a challenging time. There had been a civil grand jury report. The actual leadership, our president of the Arts Commission, now J.D. Beltran, had called for an audit. So the Arts Commission took kind of ownership over those financial challenges and called for an audit. We have a new CFO in charge. Rebecca Krell is doing a great job working with the city controller's office, setting up controls, and we've reorganized our entire financial department. We have a lot of new systems in place. And all that back-end work is to make sure that what we're doing to champion affordable opportunities for artists to make a living in San Francisco and to make sure that the Arts Commission has that longevity we need to make sure San Francisco is the unique city we see in this book today.
Chris, I went back and read that article that, as I said, the New York Times covered it and read some of the coverage of that audit. And some people who were weighing in at the time said it's going to take years and years to get things repaired in terms of accountability and operations.
Well, you know, I think we've done a great job in a year. You can see our responses to the civil grand jury report. We went before the Board of Supervisors Government Audit and Oversight Committee and responded point by point to all the different recommendations. And some of them will take longer than others, but we have also shored up our registrar capacity at the organization. We're amidst a pretty thorough inventory to make sure that all of our assets, our cultural assets throughout the city, are assessed properly and documented properly. And I think we're making good headway. It's certainly a work in progress. And I think, as you can see throughout the book, we see that it's no short order to care for all of our cultural assets. And at different times, each asset has had its own challenges, and I'm sure I'll have some during my tenure, but I'm looking forward to building some systems in place that can make sure that the Arts Commission is in its proper place as a signature city agency.
Well, let's talk about some of the public art that's out there. And Susan Wells, obviously, when we talk about Coit Tower, there was a lot of, as you say, violence attached to that, and it was an unfortunate part of our history. We've had some pretty big fights, though, nothing quite like that. But, I mean, what stands out in terms of the controversy?
I think, for me, the fight over the Pioneer Monument, which started in 1991. And this was a 19th-century monument celebrating the founding of the state of California. And because of its origins in the 19th century, it depicted a very much older view of that history. So you had a friar and a Spanish vaquero looming over a Native American who was seated submissively on the ground. And in 1991, the Arts Commission wanted to move that monument by the public library. And there was a tremendous amount of pushback from the community on that. Conservationists and preservationists did not want it moved. That was the first thing. But secondly, the Native American community wanted the monument destroyed because of the story that it told, which was so completely out of sync with a more modern, broader understanding of history. So it was a process that took a number of years, and it involved negotiations with the Native American community, the Spanish consulate, the Archbishop of San Francisco, and city government. And the resolution was finally that the Arts Commission would create a plaque that provided historical context for the monument. And to me, that is such a great example of this clash and these battles over cultural symbols and the robust pluralism of San Francisco and how that's really expressed through controversies over its public art.
Of course, I was remembering some of the disputes over the equestrian statue of the Mission Dolores founder, Juan Bautista de Anza. In fact, I remember Chris Daly saying, you know, it's best placed in the bottom of the bay. And then other memories were flooding back to me, that graffiti-inspired bust of George Moscone back in 1981 with the bullet holes and the bloodstains and the Twinkies. I mean, we've had some pretty heated and very strong controversies through the years. Where are we looking toward in the future now, if I could go to you on this, Tom DeCaney, under your administration? I mean, there's going to be a lot more technology now because there's a lot more in San Francisco, I imagine.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing a lot of artists exploring with new technologies. I think one of the programs that's most exciting at the San Francisco Arts Commission is our Cultural Equity Grants Program, which the book tells the founding of. But I think we really are seeing a shift in the landscape. And one of my visions is to make sure we see a really united arts and culture ecosystem. Traditionally, I think we've seen these debates about big versus small or how we are divided. But I think my vision is to see us in a more united front and seeing kind of how we all relate to one another. And I think we have a lot more in common as an arts and culture sector than we have that divides us. And I think one of our missions at the Arts Commission is to make sure there's a level playing field to help individual artists. We have an individual artist commission program I think we're seeing a lot of artists who came about in the 1960s and 70s as artists and activists. You know, we want to see them have a secure future for their legacy, to make sure that their work lives on, that they're training young leaders to take on that work, and that we kind of take those values and move them forward into the future. And I'm very hopeful. I think it's an exciting time as we see the economy recover for the arts to flourish in San Francisco.
Well, you've also got a lot planned for the Central Subway, don't you, in terms of art? In fact, we're going to hear from an artist in just a moment, but give us a broad picture.
Yeah, we do. I think it's really exciting to see all the art opportunities with the new stations coming online. We're also playing a role through our civic design review to make sure that those designs fit in well to the neighborhood and that they're kind of really groundbreaking in terms of their use and that they have the best function possible. One work I think is going to be really exciting is a Roxy Payne sculpture that'll be at 4th and Clementina. It's entitled Node. It actually reaches 110 feet. And it'll be a definite signature to the South of Market landscape. And you can see some photos online. It was recently covered in SFist. And I think it'll be a real signature for kind of what Node kind of refers to. It's almost as if it's a nerve ending extending into the sky 110 feet. And to me, it really represents kind of some great risk-taking in public art.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about public art. We're also talking about the Arts Commission and a new book, which is called San Francisco Arts for the City, Civic Art and Urban Change between 1932 and 2012, authored by Susan Wells, who's here with us. Tom DeCaney is also here, Director of Cultural Affairs for the City and County of San Francisco and a board member of the California Alliance for Arts Education. Open up the phone lines now and invite those of you listening to join us. In fact, what public art in San Francisco, you could, of course, or anywhere in the Bay Area for that matter, I'd like to hear some people comment or opine on whether they feel San Francisco art or whatever city you may be in, Oakland, San Jose, how the public art stacks up to other cities you've been in, perhaps not only in the United States, but internationally. And what should the role of government be in funding art? I mean, we've got two kind of really central points of departure here in terms of conversation and thoughts from you, our listeners, and we always, of course, warmly welcome them. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to call us. We welcome any questions or comments you have about any of the art that's out there. I'd learned a lot of things from Susan's book. Knew, for example, that Benny Bufano cut off his trigger finger, chopped it off, and sent it to Woodrow Wilson. You get all kinds of fascinating sort of, well, shall we say, unusual information like that. But you also see photographs and the work of what has made San Francisco so unique in terms of public art. And we'll hear from you in terms of how you think it stacks up. And again, any questions or comments you have. You might also email us if you have questions or comments. Our email address, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments directly onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And of course, there are other ways to communicate with us. If you prefer them, you can go to our Facebook page or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. I wanted to bring Catherine Wagner into this before I bring you, our listeners, into this. She is a photographer, and her work is in the new book that we're bringing to your attention here by Susan Wells. And her work is also going to be included in the Art Commission's new Central Subway Public Art Program, which we just spoke about with Director Tom DeCaney. Catherine Wagner, welcome to the program.
Morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And I ought to mention you're a Mills College professor as well, and have been involved in a number of projects that people may be familiar with, including bringing some of my favorite authors to our attention by doing book project. But tell us about the Central Subway Project and your photographs.
Well, I first of all, excuse my voice. I'm channeling Tallulah Bankhead, who also shares my birthday. So I actually photographed the building of the Moscone Center 35 years ago, and I was interested in this site because of its location in the city, which has subsequently become, you know, both geographically and culturally the center of San Francisco. And I was interested in the fact that there was this silent demarcation, that this area almost didn't exist. The photographs that I made at that time were really dealing with these ideas about archaeology in reverse.
Forgive me, Catherine. This was in the late 70s, wasn't it?
Mid-70s. And so I was thinking about ideas of change. I was thinking about these construction photographs not as a document to the Moscone site, but more specifically about ideas of hope, ideas of change, ideas of what the city might be. And the photographs have, in time, become these markers of place and time, I think, that encourage people to consider both the area's past and its future. So it's really interesting to me that I made these photographs 35 years ago, and now I will, in 2016, see these photographs etched in, 10-foot by 15-foot granite panels. So when you come up from the subway, you'll see the photographs in the exact same place I made them 35 years ago.
And congratulations on this, because it's pretty exciting. What is the timeline?
I believe the Central Subway will be operating 2016, 2017.
So when the subway opens, pretty much Tom DeCaney, we will see the work of our artist Catherine Wagner here this morning. And the Art Commission sees this as a permanent installation, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, because so much of the public arts as well has been not exactly permanent by any means. In fact, some of these things come and go, and they're quite ephemeral, and they're understandably. I mean, art should be ephemeral, I suppose, to some people, but it also should be permanent. What about public art?
Well, I think there's been more receptivity to temporary art in some ways in San Francisco, because people can live with it, but they also know that it's going to go away at some point. Whereas permanent art really, really invokes the sort of politics of place and neighborhood and community groups who have really been a very active part of the San Francisco political landscape since the 1950s, in fact. So I think if there are three qualities to San Francisco politics and public art, I would say diversity, contentiousness, and neighborhood activism.
Well, Catherine, what do you think at this present point, from your perspective, about the state of public art in San Francisco and the Bay Area?
I think that public art is probably one of the healthiest places it's been, in that so many other artists who had never considered kind of, integrating their art into a public environment, working across disciplines with architecture, with community, are now really thinking about that. So I think that the level of quality and it's just a much higher level, I think, that's speaking to contemporary building and community in the Bay Area.
Well, Catherine, it's good to have you on. Take care of your voice, and again, congratulations.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Catherine Wagner, she is an artist and photographer, and her work is appearing in the new book and will be appearing on the Central Subway when it comes to fruition. It's part of the Art Commission's new Central Subway Public Art Program. And again, you may want to weigh in here. In fact, we're coming up on a break, and when we return, we'll hear from you, our listeners. If you'd like to join us, our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786, or you can email us forum@kqed.org or post any questions or comments you have directly on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. How's funding look in these tough times, Tom?
San Francisco on par is pretty healthy in terms of our arts funding. I think it's been a difficult, 6-7 years, as it has been for many sectors. But we're hopefully seeing a return on the 3-year endowments for many of our private funders in the arts. And I think as a city, we're committed to making sure that we continue to fund the arts at a healthy level. Something to take note about, I think, is at the state level, California has struggled very much in terms of funding on a per capita level. And there's a new measure coming forward, AB 580. That would restore California Arts Council's budget to the $75 million level. So we're hopeful to that.
Tom DeCaney, again, is Director of Cultural Affairs for the City and County of San Francisco. And we're also talking with Susan Wells, the author of a new book called Arts for the City, which has photography in it by Richard Barnes, Ruth Bernard, John Chiara, Imogene Cunningham, Jim Goldberg, Doug Hall. The list goes on and on. Plus plugs from my two colleagues, Bob Issel and Dick Cherney. When we return, more. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Today, it's nearly impossible to imagine San Francisco's Telegraph Hill without its landmark Coy Tower. But when the San Francisco Arts Commission approved the tower project in the early 1930s, public opinion was sharply divided. And for 80 years, the city's Arts Commission has been at the center of a lively and often stormy debate over taxpayer-funded art. The commission's pivotal role in shaping public art and design is the subject of a new book, San Francisco Arts for the City. talking with the author, Susan Wells, current director of the commission, Tom Dehaney, and you. And in fact, we'll hear from you in just a moment. I want to mention that I mentioned Benny Bufano, and I have to sometimes train myself to realize that when I mention a name like that, not everybody knows by any means who Benny Bufano is. Susan, how important – tell him, first of all, he's a sculptor, and you see his work and have seen his work really throughout the Bay Area. How important is his role?
Well, he was brought onto the Art Commission to shake things up in the late 1940s because the opinion was, after World War II, that the Arts Commission was getting stale and stagnant. And Benny Bufano had a very powerful personality, and he's famous in San Francisco for his sculptures of animals. They're very sort of soft and wonderful sculptures. I think anybody who's seen one would recognize
them. Not only San Francisco, in Ross, there's one quite prominent in the city of Ross, for those who know that city. Yeah,
that's right. And he was very irascible. And he did claim to cut off his trigger finger during World War I and send it to the president as a pacifist act of protest, although that's been disputed. But he did definitely shake things up in the Arts Commission, and he lobbied for improvements like trees on city streets, which I think we can all thank him for, and also for having the first municipal outdoor arts festival in the United States.
Well, as you point out in your book, by the time we get to the 60s, which were, heaven knows, you know, lively enough with all kinds of activity and different kinds of avant-garde art and experimental art, this public art really began to go into the neighborhoods in a large way.
It definitely did. And I have to say that the roots of that were in the late 1950s. There was something called the San Francisco Freeway Revolt. The state and the city were planning to create freeways that crossed the Marina Green and Aquatic Park. And there was a huge uproar from the neighborhoods over this. This San Francisco's middle class was really growing after World War II, and they organized.
They were galvanized by this, yeah.
They were galvanized by this, and it changed San Francisco politics, and it changed San Francisco public life. And so in the 1960s, neighborhood activism converged with the culture wars, and it was this huge explosion of creativity, but also community-focused art and community-focused politics and identity politics that all really, really exploded throughout the 1960s and 70s.
Let me read some comments from listeners. Beth writes on our website, during the Great Depression and then World War II, art libraries were funded because citizens knew these brought communities together and as such had value. How times have changed. There's a lament. Anna writes, how can the Arts Commission correct a huge mistake? Justin Herman Plaza, the ugliest piece of public art ever commissioned. It looks like a bunch of rusted junk left over from a construction project. It does not blend with the character of the Embarcadero on the ferry building. It is an eyesore. Please get rid of this monster. You must get these kind of comments constantly, Tom.
We do.
I don't mean to diminish it, but, you know, public art people take a really passionate feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to how powerful art can be in terms of defining place and to how it triggers in us our own values, both aesthetically and in terms of kind of the sense of place that it creates for us. So we do get a lot of input along the way, and I think one of the things we're committed to at the Arts Commission is a robust community process. We've certainly learned over the years that community engagement is critical to the success of our public art projects as well as to our programming in general.
Well, I remember going to the Palace of Fine Arts, which is one of the projects associated with public art and its history in San Francisco, and the Legion of Honor, and seeing an exhibit by Francis Bacon and thinking, boy, this is depressing, because it is. His art is. There's no question about it. But it gets into you. I mean, there's no escaping the fact that if it penetrates you on some level, then it's doing what it should do. I mean, it can uplift you. It can elevate you. Aesthetics ought to do that. But at the same time, it can take you to darker places, too. That's what art does sometimes. I don't know. I'm not going to comment on Justin Herman Plaza. But here's Joseph who writes, art enriches our cities and our culture, so of course the government should do whatever it can to help foster and spread art and architecture and other media. How terrible would it be if the Greeks and Romans had not left behind such beautiful remnants of their culture? When did we start to think of public funding used for anything but bare essentials as waste? And another listener writes, this morning, Ms. Wagner said that the hammer and sickle designs, I think she means you, Susan, not Ms. Wagner, Susan Wells, in the Queitaro murals were not allowed when it first opened, but she said the murals were later restored. It wasn't quite clear as to what the murals included upon opening. Could you say a few more words about what the public actually saw when Queitaro opened in 1943 and what was restored later on? And when we visit Queitaro today, are we now seeing the murals as originally designed?
It's a great question. The Hammer and Sickle actually was removed before Queitaro was open to the public. It was a decision that the Art Commission defended for artistic reasons, but of course there were political motivations as well. But I think what you see in Queitaro today is what the public saw when it opened in 1934.
Yeah, and the city is committed to the full conservation of the murals at Queitaro. We're excited to be partnering with the Recreation and Park Department to get the building into shape. And we will, this time next year, hope to have conservation of the murals well underway. We did initial cleaning this year and got them kind of in good shape for the construction that will be happening at the building. And so it's an ongoing process. Obviously, those murals are exposed to the elements, and it'll be something that the Arts Commission will be working to maintain for years to come.
The controversy still continues, though. I mean, there are people who are concerned about all those private events that are being held there.
Yes.
Voice your opinion on that or where you think that's going?
Well, we're working with Rec and Park to make sure that the murals are safe no matter what happens at Queitaro. I think we want to see the building activated to its fullest potential and fully accessible to the public, unlike when it was closed for a period of time. And I think our concern at the Arts Commission is to make sure that the murals are safe in any regard.
And one of our listeners writes on our web, does anybody remember the kerfluffle over the breastfeeding mermaids in Ghirardelli Square? Well, it's good to hear these kind of read these kind of responses, because we asked you to respond to a number of questions. In fact, we asked our listeners what public art in the Bay Area they appreciate most, and a couple of responses I want to read here. John writes, the best piece is Keith Haring at 3rd and Howard. It delights thousands of conference goers to the Moscone Center daily. Another listener says, I really wish Oakland had the same type of art commission San Francisco does. I grew up in Palo Alto, still love all the unique and odd wall murals by Greg Brown. And we also asked on Facebook whether government should be in the business of funding art. And let me give you some of those responses. Danielle says, look to Europe. The government should fund artists. Can you imagine a world without art? Ethan writes, in a time of severe austerity, even Germany has chosen to increase art funding by 8% because they are finally admitting that austerity measures do absolutely nothing to help the economy. So yes, public funding for anything that encourages critical thought rather than more wars is a good thing. And Ramin adds, should the government fund art? Well, it certainly depends on the art. If the art is to be enjoyed, evaluated, studied, or appreciated by the taxpaying public, regardless of socioeconomic class or creed, then public funding can be justified. But if it is mostly used to amuse and entertain the rich, such as is the case with the San Francisco Symphony, then the use of taxpayer funding must be questioned. Boy, there's a shot over the bow about the symphony. Let's go to your calls. And we begin, Ray, with you. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My question is for Tom DeCaney. Following his identification of major financial problems, both by the civil grand jury and the controller's office, I would like to Mr. DeCaney to answer why the San Francisco Arts Commission remains openly hostile to public participation and public comment at their meetings.
Well, I would beg to differ that we're hostile to public comment. In fact, just on Monday, we had a great showing of our tenants at the African American Art and Culture Complex who came before us. And I think we took over an hour and a half of public comment about the interest in maintaining the affordability of rents at the African American Art and Culture Complex. And we are always welcome. And we meet the first Monday of every month in City Hall at 3 p.m. And we'd welcome the public to come down and share your concerns, your interests, and your vision for what the arts could be. The Arts Commission is embarking on a pretty thorough community engagement process as part of a planning endeavor to better understand how we can meet the needs and interests of San Franciscans. And so we will be hitting Sunday streets. We'll be taking kind of some different ideas out to the public, and not just at our commission meetings, but we hope to engage the public and their interests and concerns more broadly as well outside of City Hall.
Well, Ray, why do you gauge this as hostility to the public?
Well,
based on what?
I actually, there was an instance involving a member of the public, and one of the commissioners berated him, told him he didn't need to be lectured by him. And he actually made the comment that he would see that that person was not allowed to participate in matters before the commission in the future.
Are you familiar with what he's talking about, Tom DeCaney?
I am. We see Mr. Hartz often, and San Francisco Open Government is a good partner. And I thank Mr. Hartz for keeping the Arts Commission to task in terms of San Francisco's Sunshine Ordinance and other laws.
He's not secluded from meetings? He can attend them?
Absolutely. And we see him on occasion at the Arts Commission. And we welcome kind of the public's input to make sure that we are fully transparent and happy to share any information with the public as requested.
Let me thank the caller. We'll go to more calls in just a moment. What about I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but there's been a lot more emphasis from the Arts Commission on ethnicity and on ethnic communities, dance festivals and slam poetry and mission cultural for Latinos and so forth. And to what extent now, I mean, do you feel obliged to divide the pie in certain segments in terms of giving that recognition to diversity?
Yeah, well, our cultural equity grants program, as well as our cultural centers and a lot of other work at the Arts Commission, is really geared towards helping counter some of the barriers we've seen due to historical oppression in communities. So I think it's important that government play a role in leveling the playing field in terms of bringing access and equity to the arts for all neighborhoods and for all artists. So at the Arts Commission, we have a number of programs that specifically serve artists and communities of color and organizations run for and by people of color.
Can you give some of those, or at least let us know what they are?
Certainly. Part of our cultural equity grants program serves individual artist commissions. We have a cultural equity initiatives program that specifically looks to build the capacity of organizations that are serving historically underserved communities. We fund organizations like Cultural Odyssey, Rodessa Jones, who recently received the Mayor's Art Award and was here on your
recently
show.
Recently on the show, yeah.
And who had a great show this past weekend, past 2 weeks at Brava Theater, Resurrection of She. So I think making sure that these artists who are telling the stories of voices that perhaps are not heard as often in the mainstream, I think the Arts Commission is committed to making sure we build the sustainability of those organizations and those artists for the long haul. Well,
I think our next caller is on point here. Antonio, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is for the Commission member regarding the future of the Native Ohlone people of this area, and how is that going to affect how your actions will affect the future as far as a cultural center or some sort of I don't know how to describe that, but some sort of similar thing that is not representative here of the Native community in general.
Antonio, thank you for that question. Native community art, where are we on that, if you would, Tom DeCaney?
Yeah, well, I'm really proud of the fact that the San Francisco Arts Commission has one of the few Native American culture and traditions funding programs specific to building capacity and supporting artists in the Native American community. We've granted approximately $90,000 annually to individual artists and arts organizations throughout the city working with the Native American community. We also have an Artists Communities Innovative Partnerships Program that also has funded a number of organizations in the Native American community. And I think it'll be important for us to work in partnership with the community to build capacity, to bring additional resources to match those city dollars and to foster leadership and to look to building the capacity so that we can someday see a Native American cultural center.
This includes the Ohlones, I mean, in terms of...
Absolutely.
You know, the irony is when we got into all that morass about financial irregularities and everything, there was even Susan's book even came up. There was money not necessarily budgeted for this book, wonderful book, but can you comment on that?
Yeah, well, I came on board and inherited this project from my predecessor, and it's been a great tool in terms of my own education about the history of the Arts Commission. And I think, like all of our artist commissions, it's a critical piece to support literature and the storytelling about the arts in San Francisco. And I think this is an invaluable tool to making sure that we get this out into our public libraries. We're working with the San Francisco Public Library to make sure this is in all of our branches so that the public has free access to it as an educational tool about the history of the arts in San Francisco.
Let me read some comments from listeners. Jeffrey writes, first thought, San Francisco is an amazing palette for artists. The built environment and the natural setting can make every turn a postcard view. And you can get that postcard view now with the Bay Bridge lights, which we also spend a time talking about here on Forum. Jeffrey says, can we encourage artists to fit their installation into the spaces to become an extension of the environment? And second thought, nationally, there's growing controversy about public funding for the arts. I know much of this is privately endowed, but how can the city defend the investments it does make at the expense of other more obviously valuable programs?
Well, I see the arts as equally valuable, and I don't really see the arts needing to be pit against other needs in the city, but rather part of the solution. I think artists are amazing problem solvers, and when I see artists and architects and designers at the table with our city partners at MTA and at the Public Utilities Commission, I think that's some of the most generative thinking that happens in city government, and I think it's actually sometimes a return on investment. We see that both with our tourism industry here in San Francisco in terms of putting heads in beds and bringing people to kind of come to San Francisco and put money into our coffers. But also, I think in terms of just thinking about good design and understanding by design, part of that is finding solutions that are at a lower cost. And I think artists are great partners in making sure that we have a better built environment and a better city and a quality of life in general. Specifically speaking about integrating into the environment, there's a new public artwork at McLaren Park called Philosopher's Way, which consists of a number of musing stations that two local artists have developed. And I highly recommend people who haven't been out to see it, go and visit our lesser-known significant park here in San Francisco, McLaren Park.
Owen writes, when I moved to San Francisco 27 years ago from Manhattan, I was almost immediately struck by the extraordinary architecture of the city's middle schools. It was as if someone had decided that a living lesson could be taught by building schools in a wide array of different styles, from Spanish colonial in the Mission to Art Deco in the Marina. Is there a particular person or organization who is credited with this? Also, as far as Bufano, I've long considered his own artworks as embarrassing kitsch and wonder how he managed to get such a foothold. This is where there's art, there's opinions. But what, do you know about the school, Susan?
No, but I would defer to Tom on that.
You know, that's interesting, actually. The San Francisco Arts Commission Civic Design Review does not have jurisdiction over the San Francisco Unified School District. So I'm not as familiar with the history of the kind of architectural trends. I think that you know, schools, and I will take this opportunity to speak about the value of arts education and certainly the need to have arts education equitably in all of those schools. And I think we're lucky in San Francisco to have an arts education master plan that is making sure that every young person receives a quality arts education.
I want to read a couple of tweets. Chris tweets, by far the worst public art in the East Bay is the Here There near Ashby Bart. Really lets Oakland know what Berkeley thinks. Another listener named Tia says, the best public art in the Bay Area, by far, the Golden Gate Bridge. And Debbie writes, I've lived in and around downtown San Jose for the past 6 years, and I'm still amazed to stumble upon public art that I had never even known was there, from Ruth Asawa's Japanese International Memorial to Mel Chin's hidden installations in the Martin Luther King Jr. Library to the data-driven dynamic works that explore where art and technology intersect in the Silicon Valley. I'm proud that San Jose joined San Francisco, Oakland, and other Bay Area cities in making its art and its artists visible to people. Thank you. Thank you for that. And another listener writes, I really enjoyed seeing the rocket ship with the Bay Area lights as a backdrop. Just wanted to say thank you. That's the sculpture, of course. And Bob says, I'd like to point out that one of my favorite San Francisco public artworks at the west end of the Embarcadero BART station, seldom discussed. It's a ceramic wall piece by Stephen de Stabler, running vertically about 2 to 3 stories in length, a beautiful series of slabs that look like they were recently excavated, but with a subtle texture and coloring of blues, greens, and yellow. I walk by it every morning as I'm going up the stairs that run in front of it, and it moves me deeply each morning. Is that in the book?
That particular piece is not in the book.
There's a lot of pieces in the book. Let me go to more of your calls. Let me go to Dan next. Dan, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Okay, thanks.
Real quick, I'm a San Francisco-based artist. I just wanted to know, I'm a little cynical, actually, about the art community at this point when we have to put up a proposition to get them moving to fix the murals in Coit Tower. I knew Zarkon. I grew up around Bufano and Sargent Johnson, some major artists in this area. And so I'm a little cynical about the art commission, but that there's not a situation that can't be retrieved. My question is...
Hey, excuse me, Susan, Sargent Johnson's the artist I was alluding to, did that thing at Washington High School.
Yes, right? He did. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, please.
Yes. He's an amazing artist. My father and I, my father worked with him, too, and Bufano. Anyway, my question is, in the recent projects, you're going from SFO all the way to the central subway and the libraries, how many actual San Francisco-based artists have been hired to do any of the public artworks? And I'm not talking about local artists, Northern California artists. I'm talking about actual working artists that have a studio or live in San Francisco. I would like a direct question to that, answer to that question, because I don't know of too many. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you for the question. Tom DeCaney, direct question, direct answer from you?
Yeah, well, I know it's a very specific example. At the Bayview Branch Library, an excellent new building in the Bayview, a local artist who lives and works as an artist in the Bayview, Ron Saunders, did some amazing – I encourage people to go out and see them. They're in the reading room and in the courtyard. And we have a commitment specifically to making sure that we build the capacity of local San Francisco-based artists to apply to our public art program. In fact, we have some workshops coming up for artists who didn't make the first round in terms of maybe competing for a public art project, and we're prioritizing San Francisco-based artists so that they can get the technical assistance they need from the Arts Commission to submit high-quality applications and be competitive in the process. Legally, we're not actually able to preference a contractor from San Francisco.
Can you estimate the percentage, though, or you have any idea what that would be?
I think that's really what he wanted to know. Yeah, I'd have to look more broadly at the numbers in terms of the data across, but we see a fair number of local artists in the Bay Area. And I think one of the barriers we're seeing is the affordability of the cost of living and studio space in San Francisco. So another thing the Arts Commission's committed to doing is making sure that we create policies that maintain the affordability for artists to live and work in San Francisco. We see a great out-migration of artists to the East Bay and elsewhere. And I think the caller is speaking also to the issue inherent in the fact that with an increased cost of living comes the challenge of artists maintaining the ability to live here in San Francisco.
Have more affordable housing at that defenestration thing goes over on 6th and Howard, apparently. It was supposed to be I'm talking about those things that are hanging out the window that were supposed to be, a temporary. It's been there since, 1997, I think, right? The old Hugo Hotel. Gaudy furniture. John is our next caller. John, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Inspiring discussion, Michael. I want to talk about Coy Tower for a minute. I think it's in part so inspiring still today, in part because of the censorship aspect. One of the other headlines in the Zakheim mural there says, local artists protest destruction of Rivera fresco. And as a lot of listeners may know, the Diego Rivera fresco in Rockefeller Center was destroyed while the artists were painting Coit Tower. One thing I wanted to point out, some of us involved, I've been involved with the Protect Coit Tower group trying to increase protection for the murals, is that there are actually more than one fresco that were censored. And there may be an opportunity to potentially recover some of those painted over murals. For example, I'm looking at a photo that's in the main library of the John Langley Howard mural as it was painted in August of 1934 before it opened. And it displays on a newspaper the headline, The Western Worker, which was a communist paper. And now if you walk in and look at that mural, part of the newspaper is visible, but The Western Worker is painted over. So I wondered if Mr. DeCaney and the commission would be open to exploring, recovering, and potentially restoring that, and potentially even the Hammer and Sickle mural, which some say was actually painted over and not destroyed, which means it could be restored today.
Well, I'm certainly open to working with Ann Rosenthal, who's our conservator, to assess what that would entail. My background's not in conservation, so sometimes with these specific questions, coming from a theater background, I'm remiss to speak exactly.
Maybe you get some funding from the old Soviet Union for revenue sources or something along those lines.
But we are excited to be working with Ann Rosenthal on the conservation of the murals, and also working with a local gallery, Electric Works, to do a print series as part of a fundraising endeavor for our Art Care program, which is the San Francisco Arts Commission's program to helping bring in some private resources to match those public dollars to care for over the 4,000 cultural assets we have in our civic art collection.
This is a listener named Lisa who writes, I was fortunate to be one of the stagehands who lit the tower during the World Series and had access to the stairway and second floor murals that I believe is unavailable for public viewing. The one on Powell Street that follows the staircase is particularly lovely. Are there any plans to give public access to these wonderful murals after they have been restored?
Well, I would encourage listeners to contact Richard Rothman, who is a city guide tour at the building. And he does, I believe, in some of his tours, give access to the public on a kind of guided tour. Some of the concerns about the stairwell is that it's very narrow, and so activation in that stairwell could pose a risk to those murals. But he gives a great tour. He's been a great advocate in support of our Art Care program. And I think City Guides is an incredible program here in the city, and it's a great opportunity to see some of those behind-the-scenes murals that aren't currently open to the general public.
We're getting a lot of opinions from listeners, and I wanted to read some of them. A tweet from Manny who says, George Siegel's Holocaust piece near the Legion of Honor is very moving, and Rigo's many murals, One Tree, Inner City Home, etc., resonate with me. The murals down 24th, Balmy Alley, Clarion Alley, and others, and the mural in homage to Rigoberto Menchú deserve mention. Thank you for mentioning those. Patricia writes, please mention the wonderful Benny Bufano sculptures at the Hillsdale Shopping Center in San Mateo. The animals have delighted many for decades. When my children were little, a trip to the mall was always enhanced by visiting these charming animals. That's in response to the kitsch one, I think. Dan writes, public art has become a politically correct affirmative action program with little concern about quality and merit. Criticism of public art is dismissed by the old cliché that art is supposed to be controversial. It is virtually impossible to remove public art, no matter how ugly or offensive. Tom?
Well, I mentioned that part of the Arts Commission's commitment to a robust community process, I would say we also have a commitment to a very rigorous panel process. So any public art goes through considerable review, not just by our arts commissioners, by curators and very well-respected members of the visual art community. So we certainly we see members of the public who disagree with those opinions, but I would say I think we bring in some of the top curators in the Bay Area and nationally to come in and curate pieces like the Roxy Payne sculpture we'll see at 4th and Clementina.
Well, here's one more critical remark. A listener writes, instead of more public art, there should be more expansive arts education. It's amazing how uninformed California arts community is. The arts here is either based on the collective vision of career academics who are essentially failed artists or on some lazy vision of how art serves the community. A lot of energy is wasted on reaching out to a public that really doesn't understand what is being presented to them with any depth. Without arts education, with some depth, there is no audience. All right, we're nodding our head to that, but not necessarily at the expense of the Arts Commission, right? Thank you both for being here. Tom DeCaney, got your work cut out for you. Appreciate
you
being with us. And Susan Wells, again, congratulations on the book. Susan Wells' book is San Francisco Arts for the City, Civic Art and Urban Change, 1932 to 2012. And we also thank Catherine Wagner, who is with us by phone. And we also want to thank our producers, Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi, engineers Danny Bringer, engagement producer Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.